You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hot round! Red 7, Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch! Nom, 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 nom.
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the fucking difference between winning and losing!
Welcome into episode 111 of 11 Personnel. Wow, 5-1s across the board. It's got to be a good omen. I am Nick Roush. He is Adam Luckett, and we are presented by our good friends at La Rosa's Pizzeria. It's time to try their new wings and, you know, maybe have some of their square pizza too, which is top-notch, the best of the best. They have you covered for game day, any day in between, with over 40 menu items. Their hoagies, fries, desserts, pizza, wings. I've had a hankering for wings lately. I don't know what it is, but I think it's just I know football is getting closer.
Yeah, I think that's all it is.
I haven't tried La Rosa's wings yet, but I think I might have to break that seal for week zero.
Yeah, it's game week. It feels like game week. La Rosa's will get you filled up for any football watching, whether it's college football coming up or NFL Sundays here in the near future.
Mm-hmm.
But since it's game week, a lot of stuff has happened. It does feel like a game week because the news cycle is rampant.
It's gone crazy. So I think there's obviously, since the last time we talked, a lot of things happened off the field. But before we get to that, because I feel like it's been talked to death to a certain point, we got to have some fun with our friends at the Alliance because, my God, you know what? Kentucky fans get mocked quite a bit for being these SEC kind of homers and going, SEC. Man, I'm just so happy that we're in the SEC today because there has not been a stupid – I can't think of anything dumber and also more college football than the Alliance. The Alliance that it really is Jim and Dwight forming a pact that has nothing to it. It is a handshake, wink, wink. We are going to be partners in crime together. And I don't think any of these new commissioners in the ACC, Big Ten, or Pac-12 actually know how in the hell college football is operated.
Yeah, I'm still trying to catch up on all the stuff that happened today, but just some of my research before what I've seen, they really could have handled this in just a news release saying, hey, we're working together. We're going to try to use non-conference games. We feel like college sports is kind of going in a bad route. So we're trying to unite a front kind of thing instead of holding a press conference. I don't really know what that press conference kind of accomplished. So they couldn't have just gotten over on a news release. I think the idea of it, especially the non-conference games, is intriguing, like potentially getting Ohio State, Clemson, USC, Michigan, Penn State, Florida State, matchups like that in the non-conference, I think is good for the sport. But this is all about TV money, to put it bluntly. It seems like they don't want ESPN getting a dollar on 30 cents because ESPN paid for a 14 playoff, not a 12 team playoff. But they still own the media rights. So I think they want to get them out of there. And then maybe the Alliance helps them in TV rights. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, it's with everything in the sport, everything's college football playoff driven, and TV money driven right now. And I think that's really kind of, they're just afraid because I think, you know, Sankey pulled a fast one on them.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. This is retaliation to Greg Sankey. his power grab with Oklahoma and Texas, and that happening simultaneously with the college football playoff negotiations. They essentially, all three conferences also, by the way, were left in the dark. They were not a part of the quote unquote working group that, right, that came up with the 12 team format. So they're saying, hold up. We are not going to let Greg Sankey and ESPN dictate this, especially, I mean, there is a good point to be made. Like, hey, why would we just let ESPN change the format to make it more lucrative before their contract runs out? Because then, you know, then they've got a steal on their hands, you know, if that's the case. But all of that aside, it still was just laugh out loud funny. The direct quote from Kevin Warren was, if you've got to go back and look at a contract, then you've made a bad deal. But contracts are important. It's like, wait, hold up. Like, you can't talk out of two sides of your mouth, okay? No. Like, it was just so silly to think that this is all about contracts and money, and yet this is not a contract, and there's no money involved, which leads me to believe, like, that we might get some college basketball matchups out of this that are kind of cool. But yeah, by the time that we get to the football portion of this, this will probably all be blown up and we'll be doing something new.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. Like, I love the thought of it. I think the thought of it is kind of cool. But will we see the execution of that thought?
Yeah, without actually putting pen to paper. You know, like, these college – you have 41 different athletic directors. You mean to tell me they're all always going to be on the same page without being contractually obligated to it? Like, no, that is not how, business works.
It was a very big PR move by those three guys for sure.
But they Kevin ended up, I hate to cut you off, but you're right. Especially in that if they would have just done a press release to just say, hey, we're all in this together. We're kumbaya between us three. You're going to have to deal with us, SEC and ESPN. But instead, they went on this stage together and they just sounded like buffoons. I mean, it is some of the most laugh out loud funny. I mean, I thought it was awkward and hilarious at some of the press conferences we had with COVID and all that junk. This one, yeesh.
Yeah, I think like Pac-12 commissioner, George Kliavkov, he's the wild card, I think, because he came from a different background. Like, he ran Hulu. He's kind of this, like, entertainment Vegas background. Too. Right. Yeah, so he's done some different type of marketing and stuff. He's the one to watch. The ACC's president's commissioner was Northwestern's athletic director. And then Kevin Warren has not had a very good first year on the gig in the Big Ten. And so, the two of those guys I don't really trust. Kliavkov, I think, is a wild card in all of this, what he can maybe pull and whatnot. They can – I mean, it's college sports. Like you mentioned, the bag – like Warren talked about the contracts. Like, giving out bad contracts is what we do over here. Like, this is what we do. We give out horrible contracts.
We pay and out extensions when you don't need them. $10 million to not coach.
We have made Jimmy Sexton a billionaire. This is what we do. So, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, that at least they're trying to, you know, at least not let the SEC run roughshod over them. And what I've been saying, it's just like the SEC is the NWO. It's kind of just getting Greg Sankey's Eric Bischoff, and he's just kind of taken over this entity, which is college football. And now the WCW, which is Kliavkov and the other two commissioners, are like, what the hell is going on? We need to take a stand.
Does that mean that Sark is Hulk Hogan, right? Because he's kind of the face that he goes to the Big 12, but then they turn him back to
I would say Oklahoma is maybe Hulk Hogan in this scenario.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because they are the brand. They are the historically good brand every year. Hulk Hogan's, he was a baby face. Like, he was the good wrestler. Everybody, you know, that was the guy who never steer you wrong. True American. That was Oklahoma. Like, their athletic director was like, they talked about how he's best friends with everybody in the league. Super nice guy. They were always front and center with the Big 12. They did kind of their cornerstone. And then just behind closed doors, boom, they're going to the big bad SEC.
I'm really like Matt Jones doesn't get to have all of the wrestling talk. Okay.
Yeah, well, we can have some 11 too. Personnel can have some wrestling puns for sure. But yeah, I mean, it's just going to be fascinating, but you know, bowl season, when we go to the Outback Bowl, give me the SEC versus Alliance chance. Let's just get it going.
Man.
When Minnesota or Wisconsin's on the other side of the Tampa Strip, we SEC on one sidewalk, Alliance on the other sidewalk.
Oh man. I am excited though that you brought up Outback Bowl. We get to start getting into big season predictions. I know Daryl Bird from Cats Paws had a big 11-1 prediction. Yeah, that was something. We also, it's weird. We've had Chris Felica tooting the Cats over everywhere. And then most people over at The Athletic, 16 out of 20 writers had Kentucky going under 7. And yet Kentucky's been kind of the flavor of the month as the second pick in the East. Ryan Leaf had them at 10-2 in second in the East. So we're getting a lot of just all over the board predictions for the Wildcats right now. I think we can save. That's probably what we're going to be doing this time next week, is going through a game by game look at the year, because there's only so much Louisiana Monroe preview you can do. But before we get too far ahead of ourselves looking ahead, we do need to look back at what happened Thursday and in the days since. And that's, you've had just an off the field incident, and then you have another off the field incident uncovered. So you all know the details by now, but 6 Wildcats, all 6 of which were pretty high ranked recruits, 3 guys that were essentially in the 2 deep this year, they were going to play quite a bit, and Andrew Phillips, Jatom McClain, and Vito Tisdale, all were charged with first degree burglary stemming from an incident back in March. It was one of those, I think for a lot of folks, there's the big question, like what took so long? But what we know now, as of Tuesday, August 24th at 4:50 p.m., is that 6 guys have been charged with first-degree burglary for going back to a frat party that they were kind of, I guess 3 of the guys were kind of kicked out of. And then Vito Tisdale was also charged with wanton endangerment for allegedly brandishing a firearm. There's been a lot of he said, she said, Luckett. Yep. We had the WDRB report from the frat guys that they have black friends,
they were anonymous.
Right. But the 3 guys who had black friends, so they definitely couldn't have started the fight by, you know, using racially charged language. But, you know, there was so you heard that side of the story, and, you know, there's it sounds really bad if what they're saying is true, but you do take those anonymous reports with a grain of salt, particularly when, you know, a lot of the, if they were just beating up people, A, they would have been charged with assault, and also it would have been a clear-cut case. In all of this, I think the biggest question at the crux of it is what happened between now and March that gave Lexington police the idea that felt they needed to charge these guys.
You have to wonder if maybe they got some last-minute evidence in or something like that. You would have to think that, or you know, maybe they just wanted to go ahead and do it. Maybe they thought there was enough there, or that, you know, I mean, we don't know. I mean, a lot of it's scuttlebutt. Mm-hmm. I believe they have a preliminary hearing
on Wednesday. Yes, correct.
So by the time most of you all or a lot of people hear this, it'll be going on as we record Tuesday evening. So we haven't really heard like Kentucky player side of the story really at all, other than kind of source report type things.
Yeah, we know that they went through the student conduct review process. Kentucky held them out for almost 3 months, 11 weeks while this was ongoing. Weeks, right. They got cleared. The frat got put on probation. So, you know, I mean, take that for what you will. But yeah, we don't know their side of the story yet. Either way, the burglary sounds worse than what it is. And I think
no doubt.
For a lot of those guys, it would be a simple, like, charges reduced to, little misdemeanor, and then you do community service.
Yeah.
You know, like.
The firearm obviously sticks out there.
Yeah, obviously.
That's the big one. That's the one you would, I mean, I guess they would, that's probably, that's driving this all. I say that alleged firearm charge, right, I would imagine.
Right. And then in addition to that, we had Jason Riley of WDRB discovered that Vito is currently on probation for a marijuana possession charge, which I'm going to be completely honest. I didn't know we still had marijuana possession charges in Kentucky. And that's kind of been the attitude for a lot of people, is that, wait, who cares? But his probation would not be affected by the other charge. So there's at least that. But I think it's really just the optics. And that's a case that's kind of what a lot of this has been, is it's one thing stacked up on top of another. It's the assistant coaches getting arrested. And yet throughout all of this, Stoops has been kind of confident. I mean, at the kickoff luncheon on Monday, he said, you know, I know there's a few things going on right now that we will get straight. I promise you. I love this team. Love these players. None of them are perfect. That's for sure. We don't ever pretend to be, but you're going to love this team. This is a fantastic group. There are a couple of hiccups that are in the road right now, but I anticipate we'll get through those just fine and get everybody back on the field playing. So when you saw that quote, what did it tell you?
Yeah, that sounds like he doesn't think much will be there, and that maybe the case could get dismissed kind of early. But then I go back to what I heard from him on Saturday, which was, you know, we kind of got to have to dig it. There's stuff we don't know. There's stuff their lawyers don't know yet. So we've got to kind of get all the information. I'm wondering if he got all the information by the time he took the stand there on Monday at the luncheon in Louisville and at Churchill Downs. And so there's nothing there.
It's a lot of
speculation,
too.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking to donors and alumni versus the media. But even in that conversation with the media, there was a, like when he was asked about the racial component of it, like he was kind of like I think at the very end, he's like, all right, I got to stop talking, because I think there's a point of it where he believes his guy's side of the story.
Right.
And he's willing to go to bat for them to protect them, because they're his guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he didn't want to go there, but it seemed like he was insinuating that there was a racial component to it.
Right.
And there's a lot we don't know. And I think maybe we'll start to learn a little bit more on Wednesday when stuff kind of gets leaked out from that hearing. But my biggest point is we really haven't heard on record what the player side of the story.
Right.
We've gotten really is the charges and the three anonymous people in the WDRB story about Eric Crawford.
Which none of them even kind of alluded to what could have caused the fight other than we just asked them to leave. It's like, I don't think they're going to come and like start pointing guns at everybody because you asked them to leave. You know, like there's more to this story. And you know what? It could be a very dumb story. I don't know about you, but whenever I got into scuffles in college, it was almost always over like a girl. It was always over something stupid. So this could be just one big stinky wet fart that's just wasting our time and adding as a distraction 2 weeks before the season. I know some fans would think that like the timing of that is unusual too. I'm sure Mark Stoops is, you know, this is something he thought he dealt with 5 months ago. And yet here's this season he's trying to get going and it's happening. I'm sure he's a little frustrated by that point of it as well. But what he said about these guys will get to be playing, you know, eventually. They are withheld from practice for now, but we have 11 days to find out if they'll play in that opening game. If they don't play in that opening game, I think it's safe to say Kentucky will be fine against Louisiana Monroe. But then you get into, you know, that Missouri game, you need to have all hands on deck, particularly at a couple of those really important positions where, you know, we talked about it here, Jatan McClain, one of the more impressive offensive weapons Kentucky has. So you want to be at full strength for a game that can really change the trajectory of the season.
Starting 22-wise, for right now, they're fine. But if some injuries occur, some depth is needed. There's a couple guys in there that they could really miss if they're not able to have them back.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about it.
So for this year, I think they'll be fine. But, you know, long term, or if some injuries occurred, like those guys are important parts of that mix for both cases, both backup wise and in the future health, that position,
right,
playing field health. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be something interesting to monitor. I don't think it's going to be a case where all six are going to get dismissed from the team.
No, I don't think so either.
But so we'll have to see. And like we said, we'll have to see how Wednesday goes and then go from there, I guess. Mm-hmm. Kind of all just playing the waiting game right now.
Definitely, definitely. And we're still playing the waiting game on just getting the season going. I know that from talking season-wise, Luckett, I feel like the team is kind of going into shutdown mode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they aren't giving us diddly squat.
Yeah. It was
that's scrimmage, man.
Well, we got the thing about last week was we got the open practice, so we got some stuff from that.
Yeah.
And then you also had the Will Levis news.
Right.
That all kind of popped.
And then Saturday was like, yeah, scrimmage was good. Both sides are good.
And then Saturday, what the arrests were, or the burglary charges were taken up. Shouldn't say arrest. The burglary charges were taking up most of that oxygen there in the Q&A. Right. But yeah, they've reached that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to go. I mean, we've got a Monday game week presser coming up with Stoops here on the 30th. So, I mean,
yep.
And there's only going to be so many questions they're going to ask about. You can ask about old Terry Bowden and Rich Rodriguez and the Warhawks of Louisiana Monroe. So we really just need the games to start. I have a question. Do we get a depth chart? Because Illinois and Nebraska did not release depth charts
for their
games this week.
Good. Jesus Christ. I'm blaming that on Scott Frost.
Too. Yeah, I think it's a Nebraska move. And then
Bielema's just like, all right, well, if you're
not then. Doing it, we're not doing it.
It's like the classic old exchanging tapes, you know, like in high school when, like, well, we're not going to. And it's like, all right, well, then screw you. Because Frost has done that before. Didn't he do that with Ohio State last year?
That sounds right.
Yeah. I mean, just what a loser, you know, like he is just such a dork. I anticipate we'll get a depth chart on Monday. We're not going to get a starter at that tackle position. That was something that I think all the media has been kind of trying to poke and prod, because that is like one of the only positions on defense. We don't know who's going to be there.
When I watched practice, I thought Octavius Oxenine looked the best. But hearing them talk, they're probably going to put a Boulay out there first, I think. A Boulay, Abadi, Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be kind of
rotate those guys.
Yeah, those two rotate, and plus Gibson somewhere in that mix.
Mm-hmm.
But, so other than that, we know the starting 11. Like, Trevin Wallace is starting day one. Yeah, Jones has been hurt. He hasn't been practicing.
He's missed like, what, 2 weeks now?
Right. And I think he should be back. Like, I think this week he could be back potentially.
Right, right.
Or game week. But yeah, Trevin Wallace is going to be your starting Mike linebacker for that first snap.
So I wrote about, I'm unveiling a kind of Meet the Rookies series. Basically, all the interviews we got with freshmen at Media Day, I'm just rolling them out this week as a nice little, you know, get you ready for the season. Now we've got a position previews over. We did that for 2 weeks, like, and I still can't say damn position previews. Thought, sorry about that, LaRosa's. I've been trying. I just can't say position previews. But Jagger Burton, he will be that second right guard.
Yeah, I got him a right guard too on the offensive depth chart that dropped today on KSR.
So Wallace will be – I could see them putting an or there, if, you know, depending on Jones's injury. Do we anticipate any other true freshmen being on that 2D?
On defense?
In general. Which two freshmen on the 2D?
I had David Wollabaugh, LT2, behind Dare Rosenthal.
Ooh, even ahead of Nasir Watkins. Interesting.
In the open practice, they split the groups up. They had 10 with Wolford and 10 with
GA
Ryan Fink. And Watkins was with Fink and Wollabaugh was with Wolford.
Interesting. Okay.
He was penciled in my left tackle too. I had Chauncey Magwood backing up Wandale Robinson at Z.
Okay.
Because I made the depth chart assuming it's 12 personnel. So I've got a Z and an X receiver. So I had Ollie Epps at X and then Wandale Magwood at Z. We just heard a lot of good things about Magwood, how he can play all the positions. You know, it kind of came down to him and, I guess, Rasan Lewis and Tay-Tay Crooms. I just heard them talk more glowingly, I think, about Magwood. So I think
he's
going to be the guy there.
It's also the you maybe throw the freshman a bone because you know that this, you know,
yeah,
probably without seniors to work right. a little bit, you know.
Without McClain, Lavelle Wright's running back three behind Smoke.
Yeah, yeah.
And no then on the that. Defensive side of the football, Trevin Wallace right there. But I think that's all for the true freshman on defense. I don't think anyone else. It sounds like Khalil Saunders is poking around, but they're pretty deep at that defensive tackle spot. It's going to be hard for him to break
right,
in there.
Right, correct.
And at safety and corner, I think they've got some older guys there. So, right, offensively, there's some freshmen poking around, but defensively, it's Trevin Wallace, and that's about it.
No, you're exactly right. Man, I'm excited to see what he can do, especially that he'll have some – you know, there's a little bit higher margin of error when you're with an experienced group against a really bad team. So if he's just playing without having to think too much in that first game, I really think it can help his growth and confidence. Cause I mean, like, let's be honest, a lot of that middle linebacker position is just read and reacting.
Yeah. You see ball, hit ball.
Exactly. Like just go get it. So, and I know obviously that takes a lot more to know, but if you can make it to where that person isn't hesitating, then, you know, I think that's good for his growth and how he can potentially play throughout the season as a true freshman. So that's a man. You want to talk about a big recruiting win, Luckett. That one. Woo.
And also, yeah, top 50 recruit per On3. But also when I was digging in this depth chart, like if you just look at recruiting star power, like a lot of it on offense comes from the transfer portal. When you look at Wandale and Dare Rosenthal, but a lot of the better players, you know, you look Will at Chris Levis. Rodriguez, Josh Ali. I'm just considering like guys that kind of Kentucky recruits, mm-hmm. Luke Fortner, Kenneth Horsey, Justin Rigg, Brendan Bates, Isaiah Cummings, all these guys were three stars. So
yeah,
a lot of strong development, but you go over the defensive side, all three nose guards were four-star players.
Yeah.
Marquand McCall, Josiah Hayes, Justin Rogers. Josh Pascal, Trayvon Ripka, Zaminelli, all top 500 prospects.
Four stars by most services.
At safety, Tyrell Asian, Yusuf Corker, both four-star players.
Devontae Robinson.
Devontae Robinson by a couple places.
Yeah.
There's a lot of star power on defense from a recruiting rankings wise. And that's why a lot of times through the offseason, I just had a lot of faith in that group because I just think they've got a lot of good talent there and a lot of it's experience. Where offense is a little different, they've kind of developed. And then these transfer portal additions were really big. Like I could see us writing an article midway through the season when Kentucky's maybe, you know, doing some stuff on offense they haven't done in the Stoops era and be like, the transfer portal really kind of changed everything for them. When you look at some of these guys, they
just the transfer like the portal percentage of offense coming from the portal.
Well, and some key super seniors coming back. When you look at Fortner, Justin Rigg, Ali, those three decisions plus the transfer portal additions really may have ended up allowing Kentucky to really have kind of this transcendent offense for the last 10 years. Compared to others in the program. It's just something to keep an eye on, I think.
Yeah, we will definitely be keeping a close eye on it. Just like you need to be keeping a close eye on all of the games this fall by joining MyBookie. Winning season is back at MyBookie.ag, and now is the time to get in on the action. First-time players can get started by doubling your first deposit, giving you the firepower to add excitement to the games you love, starting with week zero. College football odds boost, NFL lock of the season, and over $500,000 in contest prizes live on site to make this winning season your best ever with MyBookie. With an historic 18-week schedule offering more action than ever before, you need a sportsbook casino that's reliable, and you won't find a better place to play than MyBookie. I know you're going to bet this season, so just do the smart thing right now. Sign up with MyBookie and use our promo code PERSONNEL. Use the promo code PERSONNEL to get your first ever deposit match dollar for dollar. That's extra money credited to your account instantly just for using the promo code PERSONNEL and making your first deposit. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Folks, put in $100, they're going to give you $100 a bet. Like, come on, just do that. We're going to have plenty of picks. We're going to run through all of the, we're saving up. I know y'all probably wondering about our G5 team. We're going to save that in some more week zero preview talk for Friday. So we're double dipping to get you through the final week of the offseason before it's game week in the Bluegrass. And we got to give a shout out to our good friend BTI. He does suck, that this much is true. But I really applaud him for having the perfect final week of training camp. Like, it is the most talking season kind of post you could ever have. And that's ranking every single win and loss
respect
of
the
Mark Stoops era. Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful. So shout out to you, BTI. Now we're going to tell you why you suck at your job, because man, first and foremost, I just hate that Stoops is one game below 500, you know, like just wish you could get one more in there. And if you have a regular season in 2020, you're there, you know,
yep, no doubt.
There's no doubt you're there. So, but we need to talk about the wins and losses where he missed. We've each got a couple of them where he just completely whiffed on the rankings. But first, like it, I got to ask you, there's three wins that stand above the rest. And then I do agree with him that there's like three others that are close to that conversation, but
they all came in the same year.
Yeah. So of the three, which one do you have as your top game of the Stoops era?
Yeah. I think the Citrus Bowl win was the biggest win. At the day, like, the celebration was bigger for that Florida win, but that Citrus Bowl, it was 10 wins. It allowed them to create that 2020 class. That was the best in school history. You beat a top like 12 Penn State team, a Penn State team that had been to a couple of New Year's Six bowls. It's New Year's Day. It was a big event. Josh Allen, Benny Snell announced they're going to play when all that stuff was going on. I just think that was the biggest win. So I agree. I would probably have Florida number two over Kentucky Louisville in 2016, but I do get that, because that's kind of when the rivalry turned. And really going through this list, like 2015, 2016 were huge seasons, both for a multitude of reasons. You had swings in those years with tough losses, great wins, tough losses. And that those years, getting through those kind of set the stage for the current run, I think, that the program's on.
For me, Luckett, I like that is the exclamation point, but it's still not as high of a high as the Florida win. And some of that is personal, but I think that's what the Florida game was. It was a very personal, it felt like, I'm not going to pull that. It's the Michael Jordan gif, and I took that person. You're just waiting for that game for something wrong to happen. But,
well, I mean, really, they should have ran away with it. There were a few moments in that game where, like, if you go back and watch that game, you could easily talk yourself into Kentucky winning that 27-14.
They had that
kind of owning it in the fourth quarter.
You can say that in the Penn State game as well, too. They should have ran away with that game as well.
But, yeah, well, when Snell hit that record, just a foot came off the gas.
Right, right.
And they also benefited from Trace McSorley missing three possessions in the middle of the game, too.
That's true. Now, that Florida game, they had the one drive where it was like a 90-yard drive that made it a game. And I think they converted like a 3rd-and-22 or something ridiculous like that.
Yes. Just Mike Edwards dropped a pick six, too.
Yeah. And that's when you thought that Kentucky was going to lose the game. Florida's going to come back and win. And, you know, and that's why I do like this, because I think we can all agree that there's a top three. But asked, you know, my radio partner TJ, same question. He responded with Louisville as being his biggest win because of just how personal it was, like how great it is to be a fan in the city of Louisville and beat Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, it was a great day. Four touchdown dog.
Yeah. Like, so you really can't go wrong. Although I would take the Florida win because of how much that streak just meant. You can't get the Penn State win without the Florida one. And I know that's, you know, oh, well, no, duh, because of the bowl game. But there was also a sense of, like, that was definitely a burden on the program's shoulders that is no longer on it, you know?
Well, in the thing about the 2016 season is you had to play Lamar again. And so he goes out in 2017 and gives it to you. That kind of took that 2017 season kind of takes some of that look. Because really what would happen in a perfect world, the 2016 season leads into the 10-win season.
Correct. Yeah. But Kentucky instead
had to go through another kind of a rocky type of season there in 2017 where they had Steven Johnson gets injured. You really don't have another answer. Mm-hmm. Your running game kind of struggled there for most of the season until Snell got going there late. So there was some of that there in 2017. And then it was kind of like almost a bridge year from 2016 to 18, really.
Right, right.
But I did have – there was – back to the 2016 year.
Okay.
Though the 2016 win over South Carolina is criminally low.
It's probably the worst
– It's top 10 win at least. Because you have to remember where they were as a program at that point. Like, they lose to Southern Miss.
Yeah.
They go and get just housed by average Florida team on the road. I mean,
it was
a game I was at, and it looked like Stoops was going to get fired.
Vern, it was his last game, and it was just a shit show on national television.
Then you play New Mexico State. The defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. Like, Lee Corso goes on College Game Day and calls them like the worst defense he's ever seen.
Yeah. And I think it wasn't long after Stoops just was like, all right, I'm taking over the defense.
It was around that time. And then there was scuttlebutt around Stoops, and was he going to last going into that game?
The rumors of that day, it was surreal in the tailgate scene. 1,000 people asked me if I'd heard Stoops rumors. I mean, it was nuts.
I had to go to a wedding. I had to miss the game. So I'm watching it on my phone at a wedding reception. And Steven Johnson's first start, you had no idea what you were going to get from Steven Johnson. The defense couldn't stop anyone. It was Muschamp's first season. They had gotten off to a decently hot start. It just felt like a game he had to win, and they found a way to win it. Benny kind of has – that was one of his moments, I think, was in that South Carolina game.
Mm-hmm.
Where he kind of comes in one drive, and he carries the team down the field for a touchdown. And so that winning that game just – that was just kind of a domino. Once that happened, then they kind of got rolling that year.
Right, right. That game, criminally underrated. I will say that I think BTI is right in that the Gator Bowl win years from now is going to be very forgettable.
It's just a COVID year.
Yeah, COVID year, you know. And
no one was there at the game. It was Kentucky was in a transition. You've got Vince Merrill calling plays.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, the thing you're going to remember most is Brandon Echols getting CPR.
If you watched it, like if you watched it at home, it was kind of a boring game. Like it was 17-0 or something, or 13-0 there, at the end of the third quarter before NC State finally scored.
Yeah. Yeah. And Kentucky could have shut them out.
And then the fourth quarter got pretty wonky.
Right, right.
But yeah, that's a game where most people – I was there, so I'll probably remember it for a little bit longer, but a lot of people will forget about that game, I would imagine.
Yeah, the one that really bothered me was putting the death to the air raid at 28.
Yeah, was that other one I had written on my list. It's not the greatest, but it should be a lot higher to hold a Michael Leach team without a touchdown.
Yeah. I mean, and to do it and to pick them off 6 times 2 weeks after they lit up LSU, it certainly deserves a little more respect. And I would say this about his losses as well. BTI doesn't hate Mississippi State as we hate Mississippi State, or at least as much as I do, because I still remember how much that 2013 loss to Mississippi State sucked. I know that you're like – many of you probably have let that one go in one ear and out the other, but that was Stoops.
That was almost their chance at a win. Yeah.
That was a terrible team, and they almost won a Thursday night game. You know, Thursday nights in college too, man, that was a great pregame. Yeah. And Stoops is just losing his mind because they call offsides on an onside kick that Kentucky recovered. That would have given him a ton of momentum. And that would have been, I mean, Kentucky still hasn't won in Starkville since then.
Yeah. We'll get to the losses.
Let's go ahead and do it.
Thursday night game. But I want to say this right. Like, there have been some like laugh out loud, funny wins. And they all appeared on this list. Like the Tennessee game last year, was laugh out loud funny, like how they won the game. The Louisville game in 2019 was laugh out loud funny. And then the Leach game too. Those three, just from a pure enjoyment factor of sitting down to watch a game for 3 hours and just the, like, especially later in the game, like the third and fourth quarter, just the, like, you got belly laughs just watching the game.
Oh man.
And so those for those reasons alone, I think should be higher.
I will say the Louisville game in 2019, there was a moment at halftime where things were looking a little shaky. And
yeah, because they got that run at the end of the half, which kind of
But after that
made it a lot closer than it was. And then Lynn Bowden goes crazy, and then it was back to hilarious. There's no way they're losing this game.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. The losses, it's that. This list is like a painful reminder because, like, it's great to know that that Southern Miss loss, that I had kind of forgotten about it. And I had kind of forgotten about the Tennessee loss in 2019. He had, so the thing that I don't get how that can be the third worst loss, but yet 20 spots later, you have the loss from the year prior, where if you win at Tennessee, with your best team in 40 years against their worst team in 40 years, you're going to a New Year's Six Bowl. Like, I know.
To me, those two kind of go together, because the 2018 team, like, that loss kept them out of the New Year's Six.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I know you can play the what-if game, but Kentucky was ahead of Florida in those rankings all year long until that loss. And then they had the same amount of wins, and it's Florida. You know, teams are going to, what have you done for me lately in rankings like that? And so Florida gets one spot ahead of Kentucky. They go to the Peach Bowl instead.
And then you combine that 2018 loss with the 2019 loss at home. It was a fun day in Lexington. They started to play better. That one, those two together, that was tough, I think. But as separate entities, I don't see how 2019 is that higher than 2018. I agree.
I do like that some of his commentary. Like, I don't remember losing to Vanderbilt in 2013, but he said, I attended this game and it was truly the worst I've ever seen a Kentucky team play.
For me, like, that Southern Miss loss, Nick, that in 2016, that's up there with any Florida loss to me.
Especially because they were up by so much at going into halftime.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's the first real moment where you had to think to yourself, well, it's like,
oh God,
this isn't going to work. Like, that's the first legitimate moment where you had to sit down and be like, seriously doubt if this was going to work, the hire in general. I think there was real doubt. And the whole Shannon Dawson effect, he made the right move. Because really, I had 2015. I thought he had the 2015 loss too low. Because to me, the 2015 loss was kind of good, because it was like, all right, you can get Dawson out of here now. Like, it just didn't work, period. In the story, he's out, and let's turn the page. And then you go out the next game and you have to play him, and you lose to him in that fashion. I thought that was that's as easily hurts as much as any of those Florida losses to me.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Absolutely brutal. And to think that they were winning by – there was so much promise, so much hope, and then the rug just pulled out from under you. Barker gets hurt, and just all of your thoughts and optimism just like that, gone. Absolutely gone. But
The 2016 season was the biggest roller coaster this fan base has ever been through. Like, the 2016 Georgia loss is on here. I think that's too low. That was a huge game, a huge moment. It's one of the best atmospheres of the Stoops' tenure. And the way he lost it was just brutal. The drop, Jeff Badette, touchdown turns into an interception. You had that drive late.
Man, and that was Kirby's first year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and in hindsight, that was your best chance to beat Georgia. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I hate almost recalling the losses more than the wins. But the Music City Bowl, you know, there's a couple of games in here where you're just really a play away. You know, you have the Ole Miss extra point this year. You have DK Metcalf Mawson on you. You know, you have all of these really close games. And then you have, if Taven Richardson can pull down that fade in the end zone, you've got it. So I will give BTI credit. There was a lot lumped in there, but some of that pain doesn't resonate the same for others. And I just completely disagree with him, that Tennessee one. That Tennessee locker room in 2018, too, that was as deflated of a setting as I've been in. That was tough. That was tough. So, good thing that we don't have to deal with these as often as we used to. But like it, I will say that I still, when we get together next week and we predict how things unfold, I will be budgeting for one loss that Kentucky shouldn't have.
I think you should do that every year. I think that's smart. The other big one, that 2015 Auburn game, you talk about atmospheres. That was a great atmosphere. And that's kind of the thing with the Stoops era. He really hasn't, like, they've gotten a couple last year, but it's not been as much as you would think, like big wins at home.
Let's name the biggest win at home for Mark Stoops.
2018 Mississippi State. In 2019 Louisville.
None of those had full crowds either. Mississippi State was close. That South Carolina win in 14 was close.
But if you were there, that was just an awesome event. It started raining. Kentucky kind of pulled away. It was
also a nooner. The Mississippi State having the big night.
Well, I was talking about Mississippi State, not Louisville. But you're right. Okay.
Yeah. But just having the night atmosphere, the night kickoff, mm-hmm. you know, the place is pretty packed. That probably is it. And also people, because McGinnis kicked the field goal, and they give maybe more credit to that win than they do the South Carolina win for saving Stoops' job. It obviously had the heroics, but we do sleep on the 18 Mississippi State win way too much. So mm-hmm. I'll say that again.
And also the 26, like Kentucky should have been up 17 in the middle of fourth quarter and ran away with it. Steven Johnson has that fumble at the goal line and they run it back where things kind of unraveled on them. Like they deserve to win that game. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of worked out as it should have. But like the home wins is something he's not done. Like back to that 2015 Auburn game, they had it teed up on a Thursday night. It was a great atmosphere, and then they just couldn't get it done. Even though they played like the better team, they just had some blunders that kind of costed them there. But that's one, the one thing with Stoops, like he hasn't beaten Florida at home. He's only gotten one win against Tennessee at home. There's just not been a lot of big home wins, and that's the one thing they really haven't delivered. And it seems like they're due to get a couple. I think, and with this home schedule, they've got a chance this year to get some.
Yeah, no. Starting September 11th, and then you got a big month of October. So exciting time.
And then plus the Tennessee in November.
Yeah, no.
Which any win over Tennessee is a big win.
Oh, I agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think everyone will agree with me that La Rosa's has the most delicious pizza you can order at larosa's.com. They've got three locations in Lexington and a ton in Northern Kentucky, the Cincinnati area. And while you're at it, you can order some pizza while you're gambling on this weekend's college football games by downloading mybookie.ag. Get an account, sign up with a promo code personnel. Like it? It's been fun. I think I just missed the practice media op because they ended it early for heat. So you know what? we're figuring out as we go, but still going to have a good night up here in KS office. And still going to have a few more media ops from practice before the season begins. I'm not saying that I'm bored to tears by it, but I am anxiously just waiting to get to the start.
I'm going to anticipate you probably didn't miss much today.
I know.
I tweeted out here too, man.
I didn't need to do that, but whatever.
We've reached the point of the offseason where we need the games to start. Everybody needs the games to start. We need a good tailgate. People need to have a cold beer in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. We need to watch college football. We need it. So let's hurry up and get it here.
And we're going to – I know y'all need some more 11 personnel, so we're going to get out of here. We'll have some more to get you through the final weekend without Kentucky football for almost 3 months. Man, it's going to feel good. It's going to be great to get this heat the hell out of here. Ah, can't wait. Fall is upon us. Thank you all so much for listening. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush. Remember, go Cats and go Kroger.